Hello everyone and welcome back to the Put Your Foot On It podcast with myself, Jack Guthrie and Lewis Blackmore. Hello there, Lewis.
Hello everyone.
And Harrison Lane. Hello there, Harrison.
Hello everyone.
Yeah, so we got one less person today, but we thought we'd soldier on anyway. Today we are going to be talking about everything to do with the international break, probably the most dreaded time in the football calendar whenever we have one, as there's no Premier League and it's all very boring. So we're going to be talking about all the controversial aspects that have happened over this weekend, and maybe some of the best bits as well.
I'd say so, yeah.
So, guys, over this past international break, with our lack of Premier League football, what do you all think has been the best moments of it? What are the best scorelines and outstanding performers, do you think?
I like the fact that England gave some young starters a game.
Yeah, definitely.
Hudson-Odoi finally getting a chance to show himself, even though it's at national level.
Yeah. And I'm really happy for him that he's actually come into the team and started against Montenegro. That was really good. The fact that Sarri isn't playing him, God, that it kills me to see him playing players like Pedro ahead of him, who they're completely out of it. But to see him now playing for England and to see that he's got the backing of Southgate to go out there and express himself, basically, is actually really refreshing.
And actually, it was a really good decision by Southgate, more than anything, because, you know, he had two really good games. Essentially.
Yeah, he really did. I mean, the second game, he was brilliant. I mean, he did make a slight mistake that led to their goal.
Not competing
for the header. But
he's not a defensive player.
No.
So he did his job further up the pitch, and he played extremely well.
I mean, he is still a very young player. What is he, 18?
Yeah, he's 18.
Nearly 19, yeah. So, you know, that sort of level, you're going to have problems adjusting straight away, aren't you? As soon as it's your first start in a competitive match
ever,
yeah,
you know.
Yeah, so he was the youngest ever player to play an international competitive game, well, since Wayne Rooney for England, which, when you think about it, that's mental, considering what Wayne Rooney was doing at that age. You know, he was probably well into the Everton team by then.
Yeah, yeah.
And was already playing incredibly well for England. To have another young player like that is really good to see.
I think more than anything, it just demonstrates how much Southgate's willing to risk, because he knows this player is really talented and can do stuff for us.
Exactly, yeah.
I think what Southgate is doing is taking what the Holland national team and the Spain national team did throughout the early 2000s.
And Germany as well.
Now you look at Germany, those players have got old, and you've seen three of the biggest players now fully dropped from the German side.
Yeah, what was it? It was Hummels, Boateng and Thomas Müller, wasn't it?
Yeah. So with that happening, you can see that Germany are struggling. Yes, they may have got a couple wins or whatever over the weekend,
but it's not been as easy.
I mean, you say that, but then they've still got some young players coming through, like Serge Gnabry, players like that,
who scored an absolutely excellent goal against Holland.
And, you know, he totally had the beating of Van Dijk. Arguably one of the best defenders in the league at the moment, you know. So that just shows that Germany do still have the talent to go through.
Yeah, what I like to see is that Southgate's playing these young players. I think he was the under-21s coach before he took the England role anyway.
He was certainly some sort of coach.
He's done stuff with youth players before, but to see how much he's incorporating the youth, he has still got, okay, maybe they're not necessarily veteran figureheads. You've got players like Harry Kane being captain and Jordan Henderson. I think Jordan Henderson made his 50th appearance in that game against Montenegro. But having the faith, really, to incorporate young players like Hudson-Odoi, like Sancho, like Rice, who also got his debut, just players like those, Chilwell as well at left back, being able to give those young players, I think it kind of demonstrates Southgate's plan over the next few years, if he stays as the England manager, to basically rear these young players into basically a team
that can compete in competition. It's paying dividends for England. I mean, obviously, we saw it at the World Cup, but you know, we're seeing it here. You know, England have scored 10 goals in two games. So,
I don't know when the last time that happened was.
One of the best starts we've had in years to a qualifying campaign.
Yeah,
absolutely.
And that's telling.
The group may be easy, but I mean, we've got Czech Republic in there, who aren't an easy team to beat. The thing is, five goals past them, so it proves that we are improving a lot, even from the World Cup.
Yeah, Czech Republic, looking at the groups now, I'd say Czech Republic are probably the most contention for the second place if we do get that first place, with the other teams being Bulgaria, Kosovo and Montenegro. But yeah, Czech Republic being probably the only other competitive team in that group. But considering that we beat them fairly considerably with the 5-0, it just goes to show how much we've developed. Because under managers like Capello and Hodgson and McLaren, we did have similar groups to this, or we weren't coming up against great footballing nations or, you know, outstanding teams like Germany in qualification processes. But we were only winning like 1-2-0, maybe scraping draws.
If we talk about that with how we're improving and scoring and everything, we went down a goal to Montenegro, and it proves how
a stunning goal as well.
It was a very good goal. It was lucky.
The team we've got by we didn't put our heads down. We put our heads up and then went on and scored 5 goals.
Yeah,
and I personally think spearheaded by Declan Rice.
Yeah, who I'd agree.
I think there was one massive shout out to him for those international campaign, because he was brilliant in the 2 games he's played.
I think there was one point where he lost the ball in the game
and he just turned around and stuck his foot out and won it right back.
Yeah.
And I don't know if we scored a goal from that, but another big thing that happened was when Henderson came on. Now, I've never really been the biggest fan of Jordan Henderson. I've never seen him really as a leadership type, nor really good player. But he came on as a sub against Montenegro and made such an impact. I mean, I know there was one time where similarly with Declan Rice, he just turned round, made a tackle, one through ball and Sterling's in on goal. And, you know, just having big impact players like that who are able to come on, like Hudson-Odoi was an impact player against the Czech Republic, where he came on for Sterling, who played an absolute blinder and continued that performance.
And looked promising enough to earn himself a start against Montenegro.
Yeah, exactly. I think another person we have to also give a slight shout out to is Jadon Sancho.
Yeah.
Another very young, under-17 World Cup winner. I think he got he assisted the first Sterling goal.
He did, yes indeed. Yeah.
It's testament to his abilities as well, because although he's sort of like, Sterling's getting all the praise at the moment, but Sancho was there in that first game against the Czech Republic, quite a prominent figure, you know.
Definitely.
Spearheading quite a lot of the attacks we were making, and obviously a lot of the goals. Although he came off in the second half.
Yeah.
He still made that impact.
Definitely. So what do you think about Hudson-Odoi getting an England start before he gets a Chelsea start?
I think it's just shame on Sarri, to be honest. You know,
I genuinely think it is awful. The fact that he can clearly be seen to be a good player by his national coach, but the guy who coaches him every day can't see that he's better than Pedro and Willian. I mean,
but that's what I mean. Chelsea have been struggling, arguably, quite a lot this season.
Yeah, definitely.
You know, you've got a player like, you got actually another player we've got to commend for England is Barkley last night.
Yeah, to be fair, he played really well.
Also, another player who's not getting into that Chelsea team week in, week out. Clearly, Sarri is liking the foreign players. I mean, you cannot oppose playing Kante, arguably one of the best midfielders in the world.
No.
But playing a player like Jorginho and Kovacic, who, yes, they do their defensive jobs, but attacking-wise, Jorginho's got the most passes in the league this season and not one assist.
I mean, you've got that talent on the bench, you know? You're just not using it. And arguably, I can't understand that, because there's been so many times when you've been in losing positions and Sarri's brought on other players as opposed to them.
Yeah. Being the token Chelsea fan of the podcast, there's been so many times this season which have just completely infuriated me. I think one of them, I think it was in the FA Cup against Manchester United, where he took off Cesar Azpilicueta, who arguably had one of his better games, and brought on Davide Zappacosta.
When you were already losing.
When we're losing and we need someone to bring on an attack and actually change something going forward, or maybe score, because, you know, the goals, they've been running a bit dry.
Sarri's coaching mentality isn't fully there.
I believe.
Because he wasn't a footballer himself, and he started coaching 30 years ago after being a banker.
I think
there's more that Sarri needs to learn. Being the only other big team he's coached, no offence to any other Italian teams, is Napoli.
Napoli.
I think he needs more coaching experience to coach a team like Chelsea.
Definitely.
Yeah. There's a lot more people around that can coach
that team. You've got so many personalities in that Chelsea team. It's arguably, I can see it being a hard job. Don't get me wrong, but when you've got talent like that, you know, it just really highlights how arguably a bad of a job he's doing.
The fact that he's had so many good performances this year in the Europa League, I think he's got 4 goals in the Europa League, and he still isn't getting even tried out at right winger. Even if he has an absolutely awful first half, bring him off and bring, I know, Pedro Willian on to try and change
the
something.
The game that really annoyed me with Hudson-Odoi was when you'd already won the first leg at Kiev and he didn't get
and he
start
didn't get
the
a
second
start.
Leg. Yeah. It didn't really make sense. You'd basically already guaranteed yourself a win there. You're playing one of the not so good teams in Europe and you're not giving your young players a chance. I don't think it doesn't look good for Sarri.
No.
Another player for Chelsea, we've seen him talking about the international break. We've got to give a massive mention to Giroud.
Oh, he's definitely.
Very, very undervalued.
He got another goal, didn't he?
Third
was it yesterday?
Highest goal scorer in French history.
And he's just a bench warmer, really, isn't he?
I mean, there's been instances when he hasn't even been on the bench.
No.
As well.
That is another thing that doesn't make sense to me. This guy has got a Puskás goal of the year. He's got over 100 Premier League goals, I believe. And now he's just overtaken David Trezeguet as the third highest goal scorer in French history. That is a massive accolade to be up there. When you've got the likes of Henri, Platini, Benzema, players like that, and he's doing as well as them, I mean, it goes to show that he should be a starting player in a Premier League side.
It's difficult because you've brought Higuain in, but, you know, and he's got to, in a way, he's got to kind of prove, look, I made this signing, so, look, he's going to be scoring goals prominently.
Yeah.
But then, you know, you've got a player like Giroud. Why not bring him on, you know?
Giroud, I think the problem is, with Sarri, it's down to his stubbornness, isn't it?
Oh, yeah.
Because he hasn't been changing the right players because he wants to provoke getting the right mentality, which clearly hasn't worked. But he also wants to keep playing the same way and not change, whereas bringing someone like Giroud on, being that basically linchpin up front, someone that you can go to all the time, he has to be someone that I think gets more game time because though I don't think Higuain's been bad per se, he hasn't been scoring goals, but I don't think he's been bad. I think he's been all right making some runs, at least that Morata didn't, for example. But having someone like Giroud, you know Giroud's going to be in and around the 6-yard box waiting for a cross. And like Callum Hudson-Odoi did for England, he put in some unbelievable crosses.
Yeah.
I think
why
this,
would we not utilise
now, it now gives
someone like that
a chance for Chelsea with this transfer ban maybe to use these players more because they're not going to sign anyone to replace anyone now.
No.
There's a possibility that you might lose Hazard in the summer. Like anyone could go. There's no stopping players wanting to go. So but there's also all of these young English loanees that are out different places. You've got Fikayo Tomori, Izzy Brown, players like that, Jay Da Silva. There's a lot of players that come into that Chelsea team who I think could replace people that are already in there.
Definitely.
It's a shame that they've brought in Pulisic because obviously that would be the left wing position, wouldn't it?
Yeah.
And then you did bring, that's where Hudson-Odoi
would play. Hudson-Odoi
would
probably
most. I mean, you could play him on the right, given, but knowing Sarri, I just don't think he would.
Yeah. There is also talk that he's been meeting with like the higher up people at Chelsea, like the board and people, potentially about not even finishing this season as the manager, which I don't know how I'd feel about that, but I definitely think something needs to change, whether it's the manager, whether it's actually him changing the play style or the personnel, because when we get this transfer ban, which it looks like is going to happen, we ain't really going to have to try and shape up the players that we've got to be a team that can contend for at least European football next season.
Well, it's not going to be right if next year there's no Chelsea in Europe. It's completely wrong. Chelsea are one of the biggest teams in the world, especially in England. And if they're not getting given a chance in Europe, it's just not going to seem right. We need teams like that there to represent the country. Even being a Man United fan, I'm not worried if Chelsea make it or not, but it just looks good for the country.
Yeah. Now, coming back to European qualifier performances, someone we have to mention is Raheem Sterling, who I think was England's outright outstanding player.
Over both
absolutely.
Games.
Absolutely. Over both games. Getting the hat-trick against the Czech Republic and then getting what was it? He got a goal and an assist, was it?
Two assists
against Montenegro.
Yeah.
Do we think he's a potential player of the year?
He has to be up there, surely.
I mean, yeah, I think so. Because, you know, you look at his performances for not just City this year, but now England, you know, he's built on that City performance and it's paid dividends for England, you know. So I'm not sure whether they base it on just club level or they do it on both.
I think it might just be club level. But
I believe it is just club level.
I mean, that's enough.
I think
basically,
with his goal against Montenegro, I think that was his 26th goal for club and country this season.
Which is massive, because he's not even a striker.
No.
And especially for Man City, seeing you've got Aguero, and he's still scoring, I believe, 20-plus goals a season already.
Yeah.
And if you've got Sterling scoring that many, I mean, it just goes to show how good Man City are.
And then Sane on the other wing.
Yeah.
But I think with Sterling, he's had so much hate in the press, but also so much hate from fans because he was always criticised about his ability to finish and get goals. Like, he was outstanding at dribbling and, you know, people even saw that at Liverpool. But the way that he's come into the team and Guardiola's basically given him freedom to play out on the wing and come in whenever he wants, I think that's massively helped him in improving his goal ratio, basically.
He's certainly flourished under Guardiola.
He has to have a massive shout-out in the improvement of Sterling's career. To believe that Sterling's still only 24,
yeah,
so there's many years left to come from Sterling. You've got two or three more tournaments with internationals, which will go to show how good of a player Sterling can be. If he shows up at international tournaments, England have a chance of going a lot further, because at the moment he is
He's arguably the most influential player that we currently have right now in the England team.
At full fitness, Sterling has to be out there as one of the best wingers in the world.
I'd agree with that. He has to be.
He stands out a lot more this season than the likes of Hazard, I mean, Alexis Sanchez, Martial.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
He's by far above everyone at the moment. And I believe he's got the most combined assists and goals this season.
I'd probably put Mane in that bracket as well. Certainly not Salah, but I'd put Mane in.
Mane as well, because Mane has been massive for Liverpool this season. Similar to the season before, you actually brought Salah in, which was that 2 seasons ago?
2 seasons ago, yeah.
You know, I think he's got the most Premier League goals if you exclude penalties, which is massive. But I think Sterling definitely, for me, he'd be my player of the year because he's been absolutely just awe-inspiring to watch.
That's a good analogy.
Yeah, he deserves it, I think.
Lewis, what would you say your contender for player of the year would be at the moment?
Well, I certainly think you have to put Van Dijk in that bracket as well. I think he'd be up against him for player of the year.
Personally, as a defender myself, it would be really good if Van Dijk could win it, because it's very rare for defender goes on to win player of the year.
And for them to get noticed.
Yeah.
For a man who hasn't been dribbled past for over a year, I mean, that's got to be one of his big accolades, surely.
Yeah, until Serge Gnabry
destroyed him and stuck it top right.
We can forget that for 5 minutes.
I personally think my vote for player of the year would have to be Fernandinho. I think it's quite a controversial one because a lot of people disagree.
But his work
in the Man City team is impeccable. They wouldn't be able to start attacks or defend the way you do without Fernandinho. You can see when he's not playing, they're less of a team. I mean, if you can, to quote would be the All or Nothing documentary on Amazon Prime, and it goes to show how integral Fernandinho is to the team. There isn't anyone that can fill that gap in that squad at the moment. They've lost their Yaya Torres and stuff. But
yeah, I mean, I'd say he's quite a quiet player in the dressing room, but I think he's quite a prominent
figure. Yeah, he doesn't strike me to be that sort of leader figure.
Whereas you see someone like Delph in that documentary, and he's just, you know, he blows your socks off with how, like, I don't know,
passionate,
dedicated he really is.
Yeah.
He's quite a prominent figure in the dressing room.
But I would agree with you. Fernandinho has been absolutely crucial.
Yeah.
If they win the league this season, I think it has to go to Fernandinho.
I mean,
yes, Sterling's done well, but I believe it can't all be about the goals and the assists. It's got to be about what you bring to the team as well. Yes, Sterling's a brilliant player, but my vote would have to be Fernandinho.
Yeah, I mean, you look at the amount of defensive record, City, and, you know, it always gets attributed to defenders, but yet Fernandinho's there sitting, you know, in front of that back four. and just, you know, holding the ball, basically.
He's the first means of attack, and he's the first means of defence. Everything goes through Fernandinho.
Yeah.
The only problem is, because people really only want to see attacking football nowadays, I have a feeling that if Man City did go on to win the league, it would be put down to someone like Sterling more than Fernandinho, yeah, despite maybe Fernandinho having a bigger impact because of their ability to defend against teams so well and move the ball forward quickly. I think Sterling will probably get it by default because he is an attacker.
I mean, so he should. You know, we talk about Fernandinho, but you talk about Sterling in a different sense.
He definitely deserves it.
You can't say...
Oh, 100%. Yeah. Like, you cannot... There's no way we're going to be able to make a decision here with three guys, different contrasts and views.
Yeah, exactly. So
We're all going to be thinking different.
Yeah.
So it, at least two of us haven't chose a player from the team we support, Lewis. But we'll stick you with Van Dijk, fine.
Do you know what? No, you can have it.
You say that, but yeah, you know, you see on Facebook, Twitter, everything, you see that it's like him and Sterling up for the, you know...
Yeah. Definitely.
In people's nominations. I mean, you know,
Van Dijk is the best defender in the Premier League. Without a shadow of a doubt.
Yeah, I'd agree with that.
Yeah.
Has to be. There's no one.
If Toby Alderweireld was able to stay fit and consistently perform after coming back from injury, it might have been him. But Van Dijk is just completely... It seemed blown every other defender out of the water.
When he was signed and we saw the amount of money he was signed for, people were like, no.
No, he's not worth 75 mil. He's not worth. Yeah.
Unbelievable.
God, yeah. Yeah.
He's got quite literally everything.
There's not a centre back in the world at the moment that can play like him. I think Ramos is good, but no. The mentality of Ramos is a lot different. I think, yeah, Van Dijk has to be the best defender in the world at the moment.
Coming back to Sterling and the rumours about him being player of the year, but also there was a lot of criticism that he's faced. And apparently in that game against Montenegro, there were alleged claims from him, Rose and Callum Hudson-Odoi that they received racial abuse. But also Sterling, I think, went up to the crowd after his goal and celebrated by doing like monkey ears or... I think it was
goading
something
the fans, yeah,
goading some the fans, something like that.
Effect, yeah.
What do we think about these claims of racism?
Disgusting.
It's so
wrong. In 2019, and we're still racially abusing black people. And I think Sterling wasn't in the wrong. I thought what he did was brilliant. It showed that he was being himself. He was being the bigger man.
He got quite a bit of criticism for essentially, goading towards the fans. But if they're going to do that, and he's showing that he's got that strong mentality that it's not going to affect me, I think he said in an interview, it's all well and good telling me that I'm black, but you're going to have to say something harsher than that to, you know, provoke me.
Yeah,
which I mean, think was
you're if you're on the end
brave.
Of, I think if you're on the end of you're on the end of that abuse for so long, throughout the whole game, you're going to be frustrated. And he's going to want to take it out.
It's not the first time either, which is the worst thing. This is not the first time Sterling's been racially abused.
It's not like he went up to the crowd and gave him a middle finger or something like that.
No, it's not.
You know, you got to think of the context here.
He's a good footballer. They don't like it. And they just don't like black people. It is clear racism from a country that seemed quite docile at the start of the game.
Yeah, I think there was some sort of stat in the commentary where they said there hasn't been any sort of
racial abuse
or something like that for like 3 or 4 years or no claims of that. Yeah. From any other teams going to
them? Another player that supports this is Balotelli. And he takes his quote is, "I am not a monkey. I believe that monkeys are smarter than men." So I think it goes to show that Balotelli is he's a black player, but he believes that just chin up and carry on.
This was probably one of the bigger of the more modern cases where he got it. It was at the Poland and Ukraine Euros back in 2012, was it?
Yeah, 2012.
Something like that, where I think bananas were thrown at him or something like that. But to continuously see how players, they don't seem to have been fazed by what's been said to them. I know Callum Hudson-Odoi had a post-match interview where he said, "We've spoken to Sterling and spoken to Rose and other black players in the community and in the footballing world, and especially Sterling, I think he said, was major, and just saying, look, keep a calm head, don't let it get to you, and just perform how you want to perform. They can say whatever they want.
I mean,
as long as it doesn't affect how you're playing football, yeah, it doesn't yeah. matter.
Credit to Southgate as well for his response in his interview as well, how he was on it.
He said he was going to bring it up with, I think, UEFA or FIFA, whoever it was, if nothing went through because of it.
I mean, it's those governing bodies that really need to sort of survey the situation, really. I mean, I think is there already something happened? Like, they've already issued a statement about it. I've got it up here. Okay.
I've just found it. It's just called Sky Sports News. Montenegro have been charged with racist behaviour by UEFA. Okay. They will be subjected to a sanction as soon as UEFA figure out what that is.
Right. Yeah.
I don't think a stadium ban is good enough.
No.
I think a certain length of ban should be put in place. So they don't deserve to have fans.
I think they should get a, you know, ban forever, essentially.
It's disgusting.
There's no place for it in the world or in the game.
Yeah,
you know?
Definitely. If racism is in football and a black person has taken offence to it in the game, they have the right to walk off the pitch. It's been seen before in Serie A. Italian people have been known that in their league have been known to be racist.
Because the Serie A ultras, essentially, I'm not going to say they're known, but it is known that they have caused enough to force players to walk off, because
one player in general was Suleiman Tari.
Suleiman Tari. Yes.
And I believe Ancelotti was in charge of AC Milan.
AC Milan at the time. And
he walked off the pitch.
Montari literally walked down the tunnel.
And the referee gave him a yellow card.
Yeah.
That's ridiculous.
It's very clear. The referee can hear what is being said by the fans.
Yeah.
That is one part of racism which that completely went overboard, and referee lost control of the game. But I believe, yes, if a man is getting racially abused, whether they are white or black, they have the right to walk off the pitch with their team. Otherwise, teams will start not even turning up to games if they're worried they're going to be abused.
Yeah.
It's going to become a thing soon.
Yeah. And coming back to the punishment, I know they said they're going to have a sanction. I think it won't be something that's forever, because though, yes, it's incredibly harsh, but good to see that, you know, if they're going to do something. I think it's just a shame for the fans that won't be, that aren't racist.
There's no way of knowing who did it and who didn't.
Yeah, right, exactly. True. I definitely think there'll be stadium bans. I don't know for how long. But I also reckon that, I assume Montenegro are going to have their own version of the FA, basically. I reckon there'll be some sort of fine that they'll have to pay, and some sort of public apology that they'll have to make to the players that were allegedly racially abused. But yeah, it really is shocking to see how frequent it still is in football, because, you know, we're now in, like, accepting modern sort of society, apparently. But to see football basically still kind of in the dark ages in terms of racism, where seems to be happening every week in the Premier League.
Yeah,
you know,
true.
you've got someone's claim to have been racially abused by some set of fans.
Aubameyang had a banana for him in the league.
I mean, we're 19 years into the 21st century, for God's sake, you know?
And we're still having to try and solve this.
It's mental.
I like it now, though, at least in the Premier League, fans are starting to get lifetime bans for racism and abuse, which that should have been a thing years ago. But obviously, racism has... Yes, it's always been bad, but it's come into sport a lot more over the last 30 years. That's why Kick It Out came into sport.
Yeah, and then Show Racism, the red card as well.
Yeah. It's disgusting.
I think what's helped also is social media and modern technology being able to identify these people so that you know as soon as it's happened exactly who it is, because you can literally look them up on Facebook or Twitter
basically
or whatever it is.
Phones these days, taking pictures, recording videos.
So exactly. If you do it, it seems as if there's nowhere to hide.
Yeah.
But the fact that leagues now are starting to call people up on it and give them really severe punishment, I think is excellent.
Yeah, I totally concur with that.
Right, now going on to the other European games that happened over the weekend, what are some other standout performances or standout moments that we think happened from those last couple of games?
I think we've definitely got to shout out the Germany and Holland game.
That was an unbelievable game.
That was mental.
That was like a sort of classic Germany versus Holland, because neither have done really well over the past couple of competitions.
I mean, you know, Germany going out of the World Cup so early. And so, obviously, so early. Holland didn't even make it,
which was unbelievable. But that game was so end-to-end. With so many young players, like we slightly mentioned earlier, coming through. Serge Gnabry scored an absolutely... it was a wonder goal.
I would like to say that I haven't caught this game, so even you two talking now will fill me in. So I'd like to know what the game was actually like.
Well, the result in the end was Germany scored a final minute winner to win 3-2 over Holland. But yeah, it was a really back and forth game, end to end. Germany went 2 goals up and then conceded 2. And then I think it was the left back Schultz scored the final minute winner. But Gnabry and Sané were just...
unbelievable.
They were brilliant in that match. I mean, I think Sané was playing more as a striker in that game, which was quite weird.
We're talking about another City player here.
Who's doing well for
their international country, you know.
But they were absolutely influential. But then Holland had some sort of reaction out of nowhere to come on... well, come straight back and score a couple of goals.
Testament to their team and obviously their manager. Absolutely. Everything, you know.
Both teams had tons and tons and tons of chances.
Yeah.
And it was just a really good game of football for a neutral. I'm sure for a Holland fan, you'd be absolutely gutted conceding in the final minute. But it really was just a good game of football.
I think it's nice to see Germany and Holland looking like they're on their way back to their best.
Yeah.
Two of the greatest teams of all time. I mean... It's not nice to see teams like that deteriorate and not have good tournaments, as in Germany. But seeing them back to near best, it's nice to see. But even though we're England fans, I mean...
Yeah, I know. Talking about German teams in such a nice way, it doesn't usually happen. It
doesn't usually compute.
But it's weird seeing how much the Dutch teams come back into it, despite... It just seemed that all of their players seemed to suddenly get old, like... They had players like Huntelaar and Robben who were absolutely brilliant players to watch. And then suddenly they dropped off the face of the earth and didn't even make it to the World Cup, which I was massively surprised by.
That was the biggest shock.
But now they have players like Depay and Babel and Frankie de Jong and De Ligt, Van Dijk, who are absolutely instrumental to everything. And they're looking like the teams of old. You know, we're talking about the teams that used to have Van Basten or Van Nistelrooy and Hullet, you know,
Van Persie,
Rijkaard. Unbelievable Dutch teams. And it looks like with both those teams, Holland and Germany, they're coming into some new resurgence.
You've got to give both of those teams a shout to be up there to win the Euros.
Yeah,
definitely.
Along with probably France, Belgium and England. That would be the teams to look out for. I mean, yes, I'm forgetting Spain and Italy, but I do not believe their teams are good enough to win international tournaments at the moment.
No, there's been, with those two teams, they're similar to with what happened with Holland. They've just got a lot of old players that are getting past it, and they haven't got all the new talent to go straight into those new roles, playing at the top levels. But one thing that I do want to bring up is there was a tackle. I can't remember who it was against, but Leroy Sané was tackled in the first game that Germany played over the weekend. And it was an absolutely shocking tackle.
It was terrible.
Absolutely shocking. It was, I think it was a studs up high. Well,
I mean, you could say
it was
that
on the shin.
Yeah.
And it was a definite leg breaking tackle.
I'm surprised it didn't, to be honest.
I think the player was only given
player.
A yellow card.
Yeah, that's a red card defence.
The thing is, it's not nice for Sané, seeing this is exactly the same challenge that happened last season by Joe Bennett on the same ankle. And when you're a player like him, he's not very big. Getting a tackle with that on your ankle is not going to do you any good.
When you can run at the speed that Leroy Sané does, you know, you'll get tripped over with even a slight push. So having the studs come straight into your shins, that's going to do major damage to him.
I just believe that with the fact that Guardiola only said the day before that he wants his players to be protected.
Yeah.
And that happens. He's just lucky that it was only Sané that got knocked, because England had easy games, so Sterling was safe. I believe, I don't know about any other players getting injured. I mean, there's nothing been said. So I believe Sané had a slight knock.
I think that was it. It was a bit more than a slight knock, but
I believe he'll be back for Man City.
Yeah, no, I don't think it didn't look anything too serious.
Oh, the player did get a straight red card.
He did get a straight red card. Yeah.
Ah. Milan Pavkov for Serbia.
I mean, rightly so. It was a shocking challenge.
It really was.
I think what we were referring to earlier was the yellow card for Joe Bennett. He didn't get sent off either.
That's it.
No,
yeah.
He didn't get sent off.
That's what we're thinking of.
But the fact that it was a friendly as well, which...
Yeah, that's mental.
It's an international match, which is no longer friendly because of the amount of subs you're allowed to use. But for the fact that it's supposedly a friendly, going into a challenge like that, it looked like he went in there for spite. It looked like he went in there to injure Sane. Because Sane was, I'm not being funny, having the shit kicked out of him the whole game.
I mean, there was so much malice in that challenge. It was unbelievable.
Yeah.
You could see that he grit his teeth. So he was definitely not going for the ball. He was never going to win the ball. He's a player like that.
Sane is someone who's just going to breeze past people. The only way you're going to stop him is by taking him down. But that tackle was just too much. And that kind of brings me on to another point that I'd like to raise with you guys and get your opinions on. How much do you think FIFA need to do extra in order to protect players? Because there's been a couple of incidents over the international period, but also over the past couple of weeks. We kind of covered it in the last podcast with Jack Grealish getting punched by a fan. But how much do you think footballing governing bodies need to come in and change rules about protecting the players, really?
I think protecting the players in-game from other players would be the fact that referees need to strengthen up on blowing for fouls or not blowing for fouls and giving out cards. There needs to be a line that the fans need to know as well as to what is a yellow and what is a red card challenge.
Yeah.
One challenge I'd like to bring up was, I believe, is the Lindelof challenge. Is it in the cup?
Yes.
Where the referee issued a red card for what was a red card challenge. The challenge was genuinely awful. He dives in, he catches the guy, not gets the ball. And then VAR turned it round and gave
essentially
it a,
undermines
gave it a yellow.
Undermines him.
I do not think the referee should be undermined. If the referee's made a decision and it's a red card, leave it at that.
Yeah.
If he's made a decision that is completely wrong, then...
Then change it.
Help him. Don't make him look stupid, because otherwise there's no point having a referee. Just have a robot there. He decides what decision's true.
VAR is clear and obvious. There was nothing clear and obvious about that challenge.
No. For me, that challenge...
It's up to the referee's decision.
And it was a red, and I think the ref was right. Yeah. But to be undermined like that...
It can't be good for his
confidence. It puts the other player... Well, it doesn't necessarily put the other player at risk, but it leaves a player on the pitch who's already committed one challenge like that. Who's to say he's not going to commit another?
Yeah.
Because if he thinks he can get away with that, then there's no stopping him diving in for another
challenge.
Yeah, I mean, it could result in another yellow card, but he clearly thinks now, oh, that challenge was fine, I'm going to jump in for another one. Me, being a Manchester United fan, I was shocked to see Lindelof carry on that game. I believe it was against Adama Traore for Wolves. That's the challenge.
Yeah.
I mean, you're not going to catch the guy anyway. He's the fastest player around.
But he's unbelievable.
But there's protection for players needs to be increased.
Definitely.
I think FIFA and UEFA as well, they just really need to look over the rules and really iron out certain points, you know?
It can't just be discussed between them. There needs to be something publicly announced to fans as well, because we're the reason football is carrying on. Without fans, there's no point playing football.
Well, yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
But it's like, it's not just challenges, it's the way people talk to the ref. I mean, yes, we're a football podcast. We talk about rugby. They call the referee sir. They don't swear.
Yeah,
they don't get
it's just
face.
100% respect.
When
you wouldn't dare undermine the ref.
Like, it doesn't make any sense when one player, for example, who's always been like it, is Wayne Rooney. You can see him effing and going at a referee, and you've got little children watching this game. They know what he's saying. That needs to be stamped out. Or even give the referee a mic and see how that changes the game.
Yeah, because they...
That was an interesting thing.
Was it the Australian
A-League? Yeah.
They mic'd up the referee, and I was watching a video on it. I think it was on Twitter.
Yeah.
And it's actually unbelievable to think that that isn't something that we have in football, because that would allow the fans, or at least the fans at home watching, to understand why the referee's given a decision and at least have those interactions with the players. Obviously, with football, you know, having the culture that it currently got, I don't think it would necessarily be a good idea if there were players swearing and everything. But I think that's a road that could definitely be explored or tried out at some level.
It'd be nice for the IFAB to have a look into that one. Oh, yeah. Possible new rule.
Oh, yeah.
Exactly.
It'd be really interesting if that was brought into sport.
It would be very interesting.
Yes, rugby has it, but I don't know many other sports that have it, but then there's not many evasion games like football and rugby that would need that in the game.
Yeah.
I think the only other one that I could think of is maybe American football, but you have a stupid amount of refs around.
Yeah, with, giving all so sorts complicated of, to even
there
understand
are so many rules
going on anyway. Going back to protection of players, we've mentioned Jack Grealish, but yes, I believe there needs to either be more stewards or more police presence around the stadium, which sounds stupid. You shouldn't need to have police there to protect footballers. They're just going around doing their job. Like we've mentioned before, you don't go into someone's workplace in Tesco's and go punch them in the face.
No,
there's standards. The standards to be met.
Yeah, definitely. But another thing that I want to bring up that happened over the weekend, was also about player protection, was the head injury that occurred to Switzerland centre-back Fabian Scher. He got knocked out clean cold, and his tongue got lodged in his throat, which one of the Georgian players had to go and actually, you know, basically go and save his life. Seeing something like that, and we've talked about rugby a bit with the miking up of refs, but when, I think it was when George North for Wales got knocked out twice in one game and was very, very clearly concussed, I think it's then that like the RFU decided, we've got to change the rules. And now there's the rule in place in rugby where if you receive any head knock, whatever it is, whether it's you just hit the floor, someone's hit you in the head, whatever contact you have to your head, you have to go off and get it assessed.
Yeah,
I think that needs to be brought into football.
There is something about head injuries in football, isn't there?
But it clearly wasn't. It clearly was not used in the Switzerland game.
I think it's the referee can decide when to, not he has to.
I think it has to be down to the medical staff more than the referee. Yeah. I think the referee can definitely encourage it, or if the referee sees it, advise it. It has to be down to the medical team.
That's what the fourth official is for as well.
Exactly.
The issue with football is that teams will get upset if a player needs a head assessment and they've only got 10 players. Well, then use what rugby have got when they have the blood substitution. So if there's someone who has to have something patched up...
A temporary substitution, if you can't return to play, becomes a permanent substitution.
There's no reason why that can't be involved. Yes, I mean, yeah, they don't get enough time to warm up, they haven't warmed up already, but that should be fine. That there shouldn't be any reason why there can't be a temporary sub in football. It would make so much sense. Going back the years, I mean, the worst head injury anyone's seen in sport for a very long time was Petr Cech,
yeah, he broke his skull against the post.
For a while. Yeah.
And now he wears a scrum cap. Playing football, which I think stuff like that, because there was also David Ospina suffered a really bad head injury, and I think he's needed a couple of operations on it.
Yeah,
FIFA needs to do something where they protect the players more, especially if they get head injuries, because seeing it with rugby, and okay, there's not going to be as much head contact in football, but whenever there is, it always seems to be bad. And yeah, something definitely has to be done.
The point still stands, doesn't it? You know, it's an injury. It's the same sort of type of injury. And it's really important that it's assessed straight away.
Because
it could be life-changing and threatening.
Life-changing.
You know?
Ryan Mason.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
He's
had to retire
young. Playing football again. Yeah. There's an accidental head clash with, I believe, Gary Cahill?
Yeah, I think so.
I think it was, yeah.
And that ended his career.
He was out for the season because he kept feeling concussed and dizzy, and then just had to end his career because of that.
And it's awful, but then that is part of the parcel. That is what's going to happen in football. You clash heads.
Oh, yeah.
You sign up for that. You don't sign up to get brain damage, but you sign up to put yourself on the line with your head.
You sign up to put yourself out there, put yourself on the line, and suffer any injuries that do come with it. But when it's something as serious as a brain injury, potentially, or a head injury, it's something that has to be sorted as soon as possible. So do you guys think that would be something that needs to be dealt with in terms of a rule change? Or do you think that's just something, a new rule that will have to come in and be enforced?
I think it's a rule change. I think it's, instead of the referees can decide when players stop for a head injury, I think it is it has to be stopped.
Yeah.
No matter the condition of the head injury,
yeah.
A knock to the head is the worst thing that can happen to someone's body.
Although it might break up the game, it's important, you know?
Yeah, it is massively important.
If people complain about the breakup of play due to a head injury, then they shouldn't be allowed to watch football. It's when you're putting someone's life on the line. Every team has a club doctor. They are there for a reason. They are there to help support someone who's got an injury. And when it comes to the brain, it's the most complicated part of the body. You don't have a clue. I think if you have even a slight head injury, you go off. You make sure you're safe. I think that is definitely a rule being brought into place. Even if the FA do it and not FIFA, it's definitely a rule that needs to be brought in. 100%.
Yeah.
One other thing I'd like to mention is there's a petition going online about the National League being added to FIFA 20. And I just thought, want to get your thoughts on that. And have you signed the petition, is what I'm going to ask.
I have signed the petition.
I have also signed the petition.
Good guys.
I think it would be brilliant if they were added.
Yeah, I mean, why not? If you've got, I mean, they've got leagues such as the Ukrainian League, but I think they've only got two teams. I think they've got the South African League, which is only another two teams on FIFA. Why not put another full whole league, just the fifth tier?
There are some good teams down there.
You see some of the ex teams in that league, you know. I can't think of any examples now off the top of my head, but you know, there are teams there that have been staples in the league in the past, so yeah.
It's only going to make my career mode more interesting.
That'd be unbelievable.
And also,
like Jay from the Inbetweeners, taking like Woking Town to the Champions League final in six seasons.
Be unbelievable. I think, yeah, definitely needs to be done.
Because also, you've got like, I said this in my article I posted the other day, you've got leagues like the Chinese League that were added just last year. So obviously FIFA are adding leagues every year.
Yeah, they're looking to expand and try and improve the
game.
And
also, the amount of fans you'd get on board and would buy FIFA.
There would be loads of fans.
Their team is now on FIFA.
Exactly. England alone, like National League teams have some of the biggest followings in the country.
Absolutely.
They've got more fans than Man City. so I'd just like to put that one in there. But they do. The support that non-league teams get is amazing. For such small teams sometimes, it is very good.
Definitely. Well, thank you all very much for listening to the Put Your Foot On It podcast. It probably hasn't been as exciting as an episode, not having Premier League football on, but the international break, I guess, would just have to do. And I mean, having 10 goals across the space of two games as an England fan ain't half bad, is it? Hopefully next week we'll have some more lighter topics for you to listen to, but thank you all for listening.